cash is one and time is the other, right? So time is just one you can't get back. So in terms of like, if you had to invest a dollar, I think probably the best way of looking is like, where's, you know, how can I get the best return with the least risk in the shortest amount of time possible? So that's kind of something that I try and live by a bit. And then, you know, obviously you can't put all your eggs in one basket either. So you got to kind of spread it out a little, asset allocation. But yeah, so I mean, that's kind of what I'm looking for there. I guess you'd probably call me a bit more aggressive with my investment strategies than say, you know, like I'm not just sitting in the index funds waiting for that to happen over a long period of time. I'm probably a bit more active with my investments. But I mean, everyone's got their own thing, so.
Welcome, millionaires and future millionaires. You're listening to the Millionaires Unveiled podcast, the show where you'll hear the stories and interviews of everyday millionaires. We'll unveil their decisions, their strategies, and their portfolio allocation. Now to your host, Jace Mattinson.
Welcome back to another episode of the Millionaires Unveiled podcast. This is episode number 347. Stace, how's it going?
Going great. We have some interesting news today.
It's not the baby. Don't worry. Not yet anyway. But no, it's kind of crazy. The global, you know, I guess Credit Suisse and UBS has been doing this for several years now. And just came out with their global wealth report from 2023 a couple weeks ago. And yeah. Interesting facts, we're up to $454 trillion of global wealth, projected to go to $629 trillion by 2027. So just in a couple years, we're going to see an increase of 40 to 50%. There's about almost 60 million millionaires worldwide, with about half of those residing in the United States. And that breaks down to about $85,000 of wealth, average wealth per adult. So kind of interesting as we look at the Global Wealth Report. Another interesting fact in particular, because we came across another article, is we're looking at the Dallas has about 92,300 millionaires. It is pretty far down the list. In fact, it is sitting at number 14 from a U.S., or I guess from a city standpoint. And yeah, kind of interesting.
And that's globally just buying Paris, which is interesting. Just a few of our top heavy hitters here in the U.S. New York is number one, then number four, L.A., five, Miami, six, San Francisco, nine, Chicago, 10, Washington, D.C. Those are got several U.S. cities there in the top 10.
Yeah, and those are on the ultra high net worth footprint, not necessarily just millionaire, but the ultra high net worth from a global standpoint. So interesting statistics coming out from these groups, UBS and Credit Suisse, that have been doing this for quite a while, and then a couple others that have continue to do these studies. But nonetheless, seems like the global wealth is steadily increasing. And a lot of it is concentrated in the United States, specifically in some of our biggest cities. We're in places that you would expect. But overseas, across the pond, specifically in parts of Asia and even Europe, are growing rapidly. I wonder if crypto's factored into all that too. Because crypto, as many people, if they've been paying attention, crypto has been on a recent tear. I guess specifically Bitcoin and a few of the ones that I track and have some holdings myself, but nonetheless, crypto's gone wild the last, 6 weeks here, but, wonder if that includes any of that. Cause I know there's a few YouTubers out there and TikTokers that, interview people based on their car, their house or whatever. And a lot of them recently that I follow here and there, when I've got time to check a few out, have been all Bitcoin people. So I wonder if that's increasing that number quickly. Talk about global wealth. On today's podcast, we have Ben, and he is probably wins the award for farthest guest. He lives on the western side of Australia, and quite an interesting story. He's an entrepreneur, invests in all sorts of different asset classes, had multiple businesses, worked in various jobs over his career as well. So we get into an interesting discussion with him. His net worth's over $1 million. And he's also mining. He gets in, and we talk about that a little bit, which is interesting. I don't know that I've really had anybody on the podcast that is actually, you know, quote unquote, a modern day gold digger, gold miner. But Yeah, Ben does. So interesting discussion with him. Appreciate him coming on the podcast and sharing his journey and his secrets to success.
If you'd like to be on the show, please send us an email at millionairesunveiled@gmail.com. We love hearing from new guests and being able to grow the show.
And with that, without any further delay, let's get in the interview with Ben.
Ben, do you want to just give us a little bit of your background and what you're up to now?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jace. A little bit of background on me. I run a company called Titan Marketer, another one called Youth in Business, and I also do some mining stuff as well, which is kind of exciting. Yeah, had a history, obviously, in investing and getting out of the rat race and doing that whole fun thing as well. But I guess that's a little bit about what we do now. Yeah, I guess I just really like helping other businesses grow and scale at the moment, so it's kind of fun.
Nice. And we obviously hear a little bit of an accent, and you're telling me you're from the end of the earth. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I'm from Perth, the end of the earth. So if you would look on a map, like Perth, Western Australia is about as far as you can get from anywhere, particularly if you're in America. So it's kind of fun. The nice thing is I'm in your future, so I can tell you the sun is going to rise tomorrow.
There you go. And I think you probably win the award for farthest guest, at least from me in Texas. But at any rate, we'll jump into your story here in a minute. But before we do, what's your net worth today?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, look, I can say my net worth is definitely one plus. So that's would be from business to real estate assets to investments and things as well. So
nice. In terms of kind of how you break that up in your mind, do you have business equity, I'm guessing, that you have in your business, and then real estate assets separately, and then you also have other investments in securities? Or how do you kind of think about the asset allocation?
Yeah, so I mean, for me, asset allocation, we actually sold off a whole bunch of our property portfolio in the last 2 years. So we've sold off most of that, and I've actually got into acquiring mining ground, which is pretty interesting. So just to give you a bit of a background on that, so we pretty much moved a lot of our property assets into like ground that's ready to be mined for gold, which is kind of cool. That's probably a bit more advanced, but the last 2 years we probably acquired over 50 different mining tenements or something mental. So I'm pretty heavy into that space at the moment, and then we do have obviously stocks and shares and more of the longer term investment play in that side of life. And business wise, business is kind of, it's cool and everything, but I don't claim, because that's always going up and down, right? So it'd be pretty hard to say, oh, look, I think this business is worth over $1 million or whatever. You know, I've literally generated millions of dollars in sales. I've had seven figure businesses in revenue and things. So yeah, saying my net worth's over one is a pretty easy place for me to get to. So
nice. So in terms of like the property you said you sold off, were those mainly like condos or single family rentals, or do you have multifamily? Or kind of give our listeners, specifically, majority of our listeners are, in North America, but we do have those scattered across the world now at this point.
Yeah.
What is it like investing in your world, from a real estate standpoint?
So I guess my journey in real estate was kind of goes back to just before 2008. I just finished sort of traveling around a bit with my wife, and we'd come home and I was going to buy a property, and you buy an investment property, that's what everyone does, right? And we ended up buying one, but it fell through, and probably like a month later, the whole 2008 happened and Lehman Brothers crashed and the whole thing went mental. And I was like, man, I actually know nothing about this. And it was dangerous because I lost like over $100,000 on that deal. So what I realized, I need to educate myself. So I went to a few property seminars and I got involved with a few different property gurus and probably spent well over six figures just on property education over the space of about 5 years, just different people. And what was really cool is we just started off with just doing a quick little like reno flip. That was like my first deal. And then we moved into doing, just single renovations and then sort of subdivisions and small developments, and then all the way up to like multi-residential apartments where we'd come in and we'd do like a strata subdivide where we'd subdivide, like an existing block into single blocks and all of that. So, yeah, I guess I have had a pretty – and we've done little developments. We're building like, multiple homes in a setup. So, yeah, I think I've had a bit of a journey there on the real estate side of space, which was really cool. And, got right into the whole PAS, like positive geared side of it as well, which was great. And, you know, everything from flips to that. So I think like learning the space is really, really cool to do. And that, like from there was, I sort of transitioned into business sort of after I'd got most of that done and out of my system. And and that's probably where I learned more about like, you know, return on cash, and I can get a way better return on cash in business than I can in property. So yeah. So that was kind of my journey there.
Yeah, I want to come back to that concept on returning cash, but before we do, I want to kind of back up to something you said. So 2008, you lost 100 grand on that first deal.
I nearly did. Yeah, I nearly lost 100 grand. So I had the offer in. Okay. Yeah, I had the offer in, and it was all ready to go, but the buyer pulled out at like the last minute. Like it was signed and everything, and they're like, "Oh no, we want to move in now." It kind of killed me at the time, but it was like a pretty big blessing. Had it, you know, literally like 2 weeks later. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So you didn't lose right off the bat, but it was close.
It was very close.
That still gave you enough confidence to kind of keep rolling in real estate then.
Yeah. Well, I think you can learn from your mistakes. I think for me, it was like, hey, look, that's going to be real expensive. Like that could have ended really badly. And I had to sort of look at where I was getting my advice from. I was getting my advice from like other people who I was working with who had one or two real estate properties, but hadn't really figured out how to like, you know, live off that, if that makes sense. So yeah, obviously I had to just go get better advice from people who had already done what I wanted to do. So
interesting. So I guess when you were doing this, were you working a W-2 job, or do you already have a business started, or what at that point?
No. So I was just working. I was sort of working as a consultant. So I was like an E&I tech, or like an electrician that works with instrumentation, which is a bit of a high tech electrician. But it was good though. I was earning like 150 grand a year, working 6 days a fortnight. It was a pretty good deal. And I guess the problem with that was I was really like tied into it. You know, I had the golden handcuffs on. So I probably stayed in that job, I'd say probably 2 or 3 years longer than I should have, really, looking back on it. But I mean, that's nearly a decade ago now that I left there. And but I was doing all the property stuff while that was going on. It was really the kind of business that, like, I had some cash flow and stuff coming in from property, but the problem I had with doing property deals was that it was really dependent on serviceability. So being able to lend, having a high paying job, that was all sort of tied into it. And I needed to find another way where I could make income that wasn't dependent on me having a job, basically. So that was where business sort of come in.
Interesting. So when you left your job, you said you'd stayed there a couple of years too long. Did you have enough income coming from your properties that essentially replaced your day job income, or was there quite a bit of a leap of faith to do that?
Yeah, there was a bit of a leap of faith. I guess I was nearly, I'd have to go back and have a look, but I was well over halfway there, if that makes sense. So, and that would just be in cash flow. So like if I had just done a flip, or, you know, like a deal where I could, you know, do quick money or something. Yeah, I definitely could have replaced my income at that time. But it's scary, man. It's scary leaving a job and going out there into the real world. But in the end, it was my brother who I was doing some property stuff with. He was like, hey, we should, because I wanted to buy businesses. I'd seen a few people buy businesses, and that's kind of where I wanted to go next. And he was like, hey, man, let's buy some online businesses. that was kind of the next step. And I knew nothing about online business, and then bought like 30 of them in a 12-month period and had to figure it out. And that is where I left my job and was like focused on that pretty hard. So
interesting. At that point, from the investments you were making in real estate, were those all nearby where you were living?
No. So we had, I had some that were nearby. We started to sort of buy in more sort of regional areas. Here in Australia, the way positive cash flow works, like I know in America, you can just go buy a property that has positive cash flow. In Australia, it's a bit harder. So we had to get a bit more creative. We had to create our own positively geared deals, like whether that was doing a subdivision and selling one, you know, or getting multi-dwelling units and selling a couple and keeping a couple. That's kind of what we had to do towards the end there, just to make them positive cash flow. And then, that's kind of what we did, I guess, like in terms of how far away they were. Some of them were within about an hour, but at that time, I think we'd had like 12 or 13 properties or something crazy. And I'd say probably about 30-40% of them were sort of a bit more regional, probably like 3 or 4 hours drive away. But yeah, I wasn't like investing overseas or anything like that. So,
okay. So you mentioned your return on cash. When did that flip switch for you to start thinking in terms of your return on cash?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, cash flow is king. Like, let's just be real there. You know, you got monthly cash flow coming in. That's going to be cash every day of the week. But you get to a certain point where you've got some cash and you're like, well, like, what do we do with all this cash? Right. And that's where I was like, well, where can I get the best return? And what was really fun was we were sort of buying these online businesses, and that was good cash flow. And then a mentor of mine at the time, bit of a long story, we had a lot of our businesses were dependent on like AdSense, which is like just Google revenue, Google ads that were running out on it. And they changed, the SEO all changed. They had all these cute names, and the whole business just about, you know, went under. I had to figure out some new ways to make money with these businesses, right? And that's really where the paid ads side of life came across for me. I had a mentor who was like, look, if you spend a dollar on paid ads, you should be able to turn it into $2 to $3 in a month. And he's like, good luck getting that in property or investing somewhere else or whatever. And that was a big light bulb moment for me, because I was like, oh, what, that's a thing? And then, you know, he's like, yeah, this is definitely worth learning. And this is kind of just as Facebook was coming on the scene. And yeah, I just doubled down on that. And that's pretty much been, in terms of return on cash for me, been really, really cool. So
interesting. So in terms of everything that you do now, do you look at it through the lens of what's your return on cash, whether it's in online business, whether it's your current business, or whether it's deciding to take, you know, cash out of your business and you know, take some chips off the table, so to speak, and invest in, you know, these mines that we will discuss here in a minute, or something else?
Yeah. So I think there's probably two parts to that. Like, cash is one and time is the other, right? So time is just one you can't get back. So in terms of like, if you had to invest a dollar, I think probably the best way of looking is like, where's, you know, how can I get the best return with the least risk in the shortest amount of time possible? So that's kind of something that I try and live by a bit. And then, you know, obviously you can't put all your eggs in one basket either. So you got to kind of spread it out a little, asset allocation. But yeah, so I mean, that's kind of what I'm looking for there. I guess you'd probably call me a bit more aggressive with my investment strategies than say, you know, like I'm not just sitting in the index funds waiting for that to happen over a long period of time. I'm probably a bit more active with my investments. But I mean, everyone's got their own thing. So yeah, so for me, I'm probably looking for that. Like, what's the least risk in the shortest amount of time with the least amount of effort? For the investments would kind of be some of my rules.
Stace, name some business partners that have really got it done.
Procter & Gamble.
Ben & Jerry.
Supply and Demand.
Salt and Pepper.
Peanut Butter and Jelly.
What about the perfect partners when it comes to growing your business?
That's Shopify.
That's right. That's you and Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million order stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to the leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less, thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/unveiled. All lowercase. Go to shopify.com/unveiled. That's shopify.com/unveiled. And thanks again to Shopify for supporting today's episode.
Is there any formula that you use to, you know, essentially take those chips off the table and make those longer term investments versus, you know, what your return on cash may be, you know, in your business, for example, where you've determined that it may be the highest at this point there?
I guess for me, like it's always a bit of a learning curve, right? Like I've made a lot of mistakes along the way. So, you know, this is not just like the glory reel of Ben Jones or anything, but I mean, just COVID, that slapped me. I'll have probably lost over $1 million over COVID easily. And, you know, so having to come back from that was a bit of a journey, but I think you can't just have all your eggs in one basket. You got to kind of like spread it out a little. So I know everyone's got a different way of spreading out their asset allocation, right? And I guess it's probably what feels comfortable to you, but at the end of the day, you can't have it all in one spot or you will get burned. So at some point along the line. So yeah, I mean, we used to do like, you know, just something basic. You know, you could do property, you know, do some index funds or some shares or some blue chip shares or something like that. Break it up a bit with bonds if you really wanted to go that way. And then, you know, you've got your precious metals and things that you can put in. I'm not going to break down a set percentage because I think that's just cause for 1,000 people to attack you online on how to deal with your asset allocation. And everyone's got a different way of doing it. I guess everyone's got a different risk profile, right? So like whatever works for you, but make sure that you're not. Yeah, we can be all in one place at the beginning, but once you got a bit of cash, you got to kind of spread it out a little, right? So
is there a rule of thumb you use for keeping, you know, liquidity or cash on hand in general with your investment strategy?
Yeah, I think it's good advice to have at least sort of 6 months of cash, like just on hand that does nothing that you can do, you know, with rainy day money or FU money or whatever you want to call it. But I like to keep 6 to 12 months of just like cash that if anything goes wrong or whatever happens, you've got enough cash to, you know, pay the bills, send your kids to school, put food on the table, you know, start your next venture. Do whatever you want to do and make it a comfortable 6 to 12 months, right? As a minimum. And I think it's different cycles. Like, you know, coming, you know, when we were selling up our real estate portfolio, obviously we had a bit more cash around, right? So, you know, certain cycles of the market, you may be in a stronger cash position, or, you know, in times of uncertainty, you probably want a stronger cash position than say, you know, when everything's not so uncertain, right? So, and it's kind of hard to have this interview and not give people financial advice, if that makes sense. So, because I know that's fraught with danger. But yeah, I mean, for me personally, I think if you've got, you know, 6 to 12 months of cash on hand and, you know, you've got your, if you're just starting out, you need to be aggressive to get up over 7 figures of cash and then you can do something with it. But I probably wouldn't go, you know, if you've got $50,000, I wouldn't be going and putting that across, you know, 5 different investment strategies because you just haven't got enough money to do anything with, right? So yeah, so I think there's a bit of a balance there, if that makes sense. So
yeah, for sure. So let's switch gears and talk about these mines, because that's something very unique. After, gosh, I don't know, 6-7 years of doing this, I don't even know that I've ever had anybody bring that up. So, and that this is probably a little bit different in your country than ours, but walk us through kind of the thought process of moving assets from, you know, real estate into mines and kind of what you've looked for and how that's kind of turned out for you at this point.
Yeah, that's kind of been an interesting journey. So, I mean, going back over COVID, I had a business that was very dependent on events and travel and stuff like that. And we had to shut it down. It was just like a massive drama. And yeah, easily over that period, lost well over $1 million. So during that period, I was like, I couldn't fly. And Western Australia, where I live, was like locked down. You couldn't leave the state for like 18 months. It was just totally ridiculous. And so I guess in times of turmoil, there's also opportunity, right? So my cousin, our business partner, took me out gold prospecting. We just walk out into the outback and you got a gold detector. You literally like pick up gold out of the ground. Yeah, that was really cool. And I was like, man, this is like fishing for gold. This is hell exciting. And he's like, oh, do you think we could start a business in it? And I'm like, yeah, for sure. So, I mean, this is just an example of what you can do, right? So we ended up starting, we wanted to hire detectors, couldn't. We started a detector hire company, which is just great for cash flow. Hire companies, great for cash flow, just quietly. So we did that and that went really well. And then we were out detecting with like a mining lawyer and he was like, oh yeah, you can get the ground and you can do all this stuff and you can acquire the ground that the gold's in. And I was like, huh, how does that work? And then we just got into that. And I guess I was having this conversation with a friend of mine the other day. I was like, there's probably two strategies here. One is we're acquiring really good ground. And then as the gold price is going up, it's becoming more valuable. So we're starting to sell some of that ground now. And that's working quite well. Probably like you would in a real estate deal where you'd get a deal and you'd prove it up and then you'd sell it. It's similar. Like you'd get some ground, you do some testing and you prove it up and you sell it. So that's that strategy. And then the other one is we've actually just signed a mining contract and looking at another deal the other day of turning rich ground that has ore in it into income producing. So getting other people to come in and do the mining and then just taking a percentage off the top and turning that into more cash flow play. So yeah, so it's a bit more risky, if that makes sense. And there's a bit more moving parts than say your standard property. But yeah, we got into that pretty heavily over the past 2 years, and yeah, it's starting to look really cool. So, but we're just in the gold space. There's just so much to learn there, which is mental. But yeah, so it was just kind of one of those things that it started as a hobby. I could see that there was some money making opportunity there, and then we turned it into a whole business and investment arm, which we wouldn't have had if COVID didn't come along and smack me in another direction somewhere else. So yeah, it's just one of those things, I guess. So
that's cool. So you're like, I guess, a modern day gold digger.
Yeah, literally. So yeah, it's really fun. So
that's cool, man.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just really fun.
So where does Ben head from here? I mean, is there a target net worth or a target, you know, cash flow goal that you're trying to hit at some point? You know, is from your business standpoint, you want to grow and have an exit, or where do you go from here?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I mean, I really want to get to like 10 mil. I think that's where I'm heading, or want to head to as soon as possible. In terms of like net worth and like proper net, not like pretend net, like proper in the bank net worth, right? So I know a lot of people throw some numbers around, but yeah, like I'm talking in the bank, you've got that there, or in an asset that's quite liquid. You know, if you had to move it around, then you could. So I guess like that's sort of where I want to head. We're actually just having a meeting today about like what we're doing for next year. So I guess for me, probably the two big focuses that I have is I really want to grow the Titan marketer into like helping more businesses grow with paid ads, because that's kind of what really helped me grow and get out of the rat race. So I'm really passionate about that. So I'd like to turn that into sort of grow that from where that is now. I mean, that's doubled year on year for the last 3 or 4 years. So that's going really well. And then I guess probably something I haven't talked about on here is my wife and I run another business called Youth in Business, where we teach kids how to start business and entrepreneurship. And we've had kids like buy houses, write books, how they made more money than their principal, like literally next level teenage millionaires. Like it's just really cool. So we've spent a lot of time on that. So I think probably impact wise, I want to spend more time on that in the coming year, and just sort of helping raise the next generation of young entrepreneurs. Probably work more with my kids on that. I think I'm probably more about making an impact than throwing down like, oh wow, I hit, you know, 10 million or 15 million or 20 million or whatever. Yeah, I think that's I get more value out of that, if that makes sense.
So yeah, for sure.
So for me, like they're probably my next two big goals. Do 10 million in liquid assets that I can move around, and you know, get as many young entrepreneurs on the planet as we can, and just help grow and scale and have fun as you do it, I guess. So
yeah, that's cool. What do you think it is about the 10 million psychologically? Because we hear that number a lot nowadays. That, you know, that's a goal. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think it's just the next logical goal, isn't it? You know, so like once you've done your first seven figures, or you've done in your first seven figure business or whatever, like logically in your head, so psychologically, like what's the next number? And I think, you know, like you make $100,000, you're like, well, I want to make $1 million now. And I think it's kind of the same thing. You're like, I made $1 million. I'm like, cool, now I want to make 10, you know? So I think that's, I don't know, like psychologically for me, like that would be cool. I'm probably not so focused on the 10 million. Like if I had to give you a number, that would be it. I'm probably more focused on like freedom things, if that makes sense. So I'd be more focused on like, I'd like to be able to have a jet and go wherever I want. Like that excites me more than having 10 million in the bank, right? So like that's something that I'm working towards. But, you know, just the jet that I want, the running costs are a couple of mil a year. So I mean, that's kind of some things I'm looking at the moment. That I'd like to do, that I'm probably more excited about something like that than I would be like, oh, I have $10 million in the bank, if that makes sense. So
yeah, it's you got to get it out of the end of the earth, right? Get out of there quick.
Yeah, exactly. I need to come over to the US or hang out in Texas where the stakes are bigger, right? So
yeah, that's right, man. We got a lot of cattle here. So in terms of like the impact and stuff, I mean, is there a way that you're able to measure that, or is it mainly just, you know, a feel good inspiration of doing what you're doing with that business and trying to inspire the next generation?
Yeah. So we want to do 100,000 new young entrepreneurs next year. So that's something that I'm pretty committed to. We just prior to COVID, we were running events, you know, in Australia up to about 800 people, most capital cities. And we've done some in the UK. COVID kind of killed that for us a bit in terms of running events and things. But I want to get back to that more in an online fashion. So my wife and I are doing that in a big way. But yeah, we want to measure, you know, we've literally done thousands and thousands of kids, you know, like north of, I would say 5,000 easy. So we really want to get to the 100,000, like in a year period. So to do that, we're just having a chat about that this morning about, like, you know, how would we do it? If we wanted to get to a big goal like that, what would that look like? And just starting to put some, and look, if I'm short on it, like let's say I only do 50 or 20 or something like that, then, you know, that sucks, but I feel like that's still a good start in the right direction, right? So
yeah, no, that's awesome. Very admirable for sure. Well, awesome. Let's wrap up with a few rapid fire questions. What's the most expensive pair of shoes that you purchased?
Most expensive shoes? I'm not really into expensive shoes, man. Like, I don't know, Skechers or Rockports or something. A couple $100, easy.
Okay. So, what about the most expensive meal?
Oh, like just single meal or as a group?
Yeah, just, I mean, whatever you've paid for, I guess you and, you know, a couple friends or a wife, or, you know, if you put on the company, that's probably a little different because sometimes you're buying several heads.
I'd say we've done over $1,000 meal. Yeah, I've done that. So.
Okay. What about the most expensive car?
I'm not into cars. So I think probably the most expensive car is probably going to be about $90,000 or something like that. The big old Land Cruiser at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's a key lesson that you learned from childhood?
I grew up on a farm. So I think my dad was really cool. Like, it was a double-edged sword. He was like, nothing is free and you've got to work hard for what you get. So I think the first lesson was great because nothing is free. You got to add value. It took me a little while to like learn that it doesn't have to be hard work, but hard work pays off, right? So I think that was good. That was a really good lesson for me to learn along the way.
Nice. What is the most fun that you've had with money?
Travel. Yeah, straight up. So,
particular place that stood out?
Oh man. I mean, my wife and I traveled for a year pretty much. We drove across the States, across Europe and America and Africa and all sorts of things. So I think that was pretty cool. Not having to work for a year and just traveling, that was pretty awesome. I mean, it's cool with our kids. Like, I like skiing. And I really love New Zealand. If you get the chance, you should check it out. So like,
love that taking place the kids too.
Yeah. So skiing in New Zealand, I'd put it up there with, like, I've skied in a few places in America, like, you know, Utah and a few different places over there, and I've done Switzerland and a few other places in Europe. But yeah, the New Zealand Alps, man, are like next level. So if you're into skiing or snowboarding, like, go check it out. It's real cool. So.
Okay. What's the craziest thing that you've ever done to earn money?
Craziest thing to earn money? Oh man. I used to have this company where I'd help people create websites. I had this business mentor. He wasn't very good. And he was like, oh man, he's like, oh, you should go door knocking and try and sell like web design stuff. I mean, I'm going way back, like probably like 9, 10 years or something. And I was like, okay, cool. How do I do that? And instead of giving me like an online strategy, he's like, oh, go do an offline strategy and go knock on doors. I was like, really? And so I did. I like bought a suit and like did the whole thing. I like knocked on doors for like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days or nearly a week solid in the sweat. And by day three, one of the guys was like, you do realize you've got your price tag still on your collar on the back, right? And I didn't even know, right? So that was pretty crazy. I did make some sales though, like it did work, but man, that was like next level. I mean, as a kid, I used to go door to door and like sell, like I'd go to people's houses, and like in Australia, we have like curbs and you can paint a number on the curb. So when I was a kid, I'd come up from the farm and I'd stay at my grandma's house. And I'd like knock on doors and I'd try and like literally get people to pay me to graffiti their front curb, which was kind of cool. And I'd spray it with like glow in the dark paint, made myself some stencils. I cut them out with a Stanley knife. And yeah, man, I made like a couple $100 a day doing that. So I'd do that for a couple of days, and then that would give me enough money to do my holidays or my you know, break from school, and I'd go live it up for a couple of weeks. So I guess they're probably some crazy things. I mean, other than outside of like crazy bets and stuff, but yeah, I think that's like income producing. They're probably some things I've done. So
was painting the curbs your first like real job or business?
No, actually, my first one was, as I grew up on a farm, my parents would be, they'd create like produce and they'd sell it or whatever. And I remember saying to my dad, I was like, hey, instead of just like working for you and doing that, can I, you know, rent some land off you or whatever and do my own crops? And he was like, yeah, cool. He's like, I'm happy to give you, I think it was like half an acre or something $50. So I had to pay him, like nothing was free, right? And I was like, okay, cool. And then I went out there and I grew corn and pumpkins and a whole bunch of other different things and sold them. And I mean, I was probably only like 10 or 11 or something at the time. But yeah, I sold them at market and, you know, made a little bit of money. And that was probably my first, I guess you'd say like venture, if that makes sense.
So, yeah, no, that's awesome. That's awesome. Is there any financial habits that you've changed since becoming a millionaire?
Yeah. I think probably one of the big ones is like being involved in charity. It's amazing. The more you give, the more you seem to get. It's pretty mental. So that's been really fun. I do enjoy that. I think just like breaking your income down into different percentages of where it should go. Like I was doing that before, but yeah, when you've got a little bit more, you can do a little bit more with it, right? So I think that there are probably some things that have changed, if that makes sense. So like where you allocate it and how it works. But I think you probably get a bit more sophisticated as you go along as well. Something I had to learn too was to say no to things. Like that took me a long time to learn. You can just say yes to every investment thing or business thing or whatever, and some end bad, some don't, whatever. But just keeping it quite simple, knowing where your money's going is a big one. So yeah, so I don't think there's been anything revolutionary. I think they're kind of skills you learn along the way, more than, hey, I wake up a millionaire and now I do this thing with my money, if that makes sense. Like you gotta learn how to manage your money before you get there. So if you're spending more than you earn, like you're never gonna get there, right? So you gotta figure out how to manage your money on the way there and then how to invest it as well. So I don't think once I got there, probably the things I was investing in changed as you get a little bit like more sophisticated. But, you know, I didn't start out getting into mines and mining ground and that sort of thing. But yeah, I don't know if that's the right answer, but that's just how I found
it. No, I think that's great. Appreciate you sharing. What's a closely held belief that you once had that you recently changed?
Closely held belief that recently changed. That's a hell good question. I think probably something I thought, I probably thought more people makes, like the bigger the team, the easier it will be, is probably one that I had. Is like the more people on a common journey that we can throw at a project, then the better it will be. But I've kind of since realized that it's not about the amount of people, it's more about the quality of the people in the project or the deal or the whatever. So that's probably one. I think, you know, sometimes less is more. that's been a big one. And I think one of the things when I first, probably one was like everything has to be documented and we have to have contracts and we have to have all these things and lawyers and all that nonsense. I've recently just done a few like with the right people, like handshake business deals or that sort of thing. And they've gone way better the less complicated you make them. So I guess make it less, you got to find the right people, that's key. But making it less complex and less moving parts and people has been working really well for me lately. And where in the past I just wouldn't have done it. I would have been like, no, we haven't got this in place or that or whatever, you know. So it's a bit more trust and gut feel, but yeah, that would be something that I've had to let go of a little.
Okay. Any final pieces or of advice for somebody who's just starting out on their journey?
In investing?
Yeah, or in business or just in life in general. I mean, with all the experience that you had, you know, is there anything that you would tell somebody who's, you know, in their early 20s or late teens that's just getting started that you wish you would have known at that time?
Yeah. So, I mean, we work with a lot of teens. So I think probably the best thing, if you want to be entrepreneurial, like learn how to sell. You know, like I can't stress that enough. Like if you want to be entrepreneurial or investment, like whatever it is, like learning how to sell is a key skill. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you want to marry someone, you got to sell yourself, right? Like, so learn how to sell. I mean, my wife said no the first time, so I had to ask a few more times, but got there in the end. And even if you suck at selling, like I did there, you can always get better, right? Like, and be okay at failing. So I think there's probably two things there, like make some mistakes, be okay with them. Don't beat yourself up. Everyone makes them. And I've never met an entrepreneur that's done over $1 million. I had $1 million business who didn't make a lot of mistakes and waste a lot of money on the way there. So stop trying to get everything perfect. Go make some mistakes, learn how to sell and go from there. So
I think we're going to have your wife on and hear this story about the turning down a couple of times.
Persistence is the key, right?
That's so awesome. Good deal. Well, Ben, where can people find you or get in touch with you?
Yeah, look, you can just connect with me on LinkedIn if you type in like Ben Jones or Benjamin Jones and maybe the word Titan Marketer. Or if you just look up Youth in Business, you'll find me. Ben Jones is a hard name to Google, right? So you're probably better off looking up either those two business names. That's probably an easy way of going about it. But connect with me on LinkedIn. Happy to have a chat and help anyone on the journey in any way that I can. And I guess, Jace, thanks for having me on. Hopefully we've been able to help some listeners today. And it's been my privilege. So
awesome. That's Ben with a net worth of $1+ million. Thanks for coming on the show today.
That's okay. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Millionaires Unveiled podcast with Jace Mattinson. For more stories, investment opportunities, and information, check out our website, millionairesunveiled.com. See you next time when you'll hear from another everyday millionaire.